Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I hope that you had a wonderful weekend, spent some time with friends and family. You know, we like fall Saturdays with Georgia football, but every now and then it's kind of nice to take a break from all of that, and I hope that many of you had a chance to do just that this weekend. But given the fact that you may have rested and recharged the batteries a little bit, I hope you've showed up here on this Monday with your game face on, ready to go against Florida on Saturday. If you're watching on video, you'll see me wearing my Dog Nation Daily Gatorator t-shirt. You better believe that I'm excited about the game this upcoming week and excited about talking to many of you about it here over the course of the next 5 days. And I thought it might be appropriate here on this Monday, leading into the Florida game on Saturday, to kind of revisit why it is that I believe that the Florida rivalry is the game for Georgia that's supposed to be more important than any other Georgia plays, both in terms of, hey, you'd like to win it, and, boy, you really don't like that guy on the other side of the field. And I guess as a way of setting up this conversation, it's probably appropriate to remember that Kirby Smart, at least what he said publicly, does not go along with me on this. Kirby Smart, what he said publicly, even though I like a lot of what Kirby Smart has said and done as Georgia coach, this is one point where I guess I probably feel a little differently than at least he does based on what he said in the past. Because leading into this game last year, and as a way of kind of setting up a conversation here today, I want you to hear this. Here's what Kirby Smart said about the Florida rivalry and kind of where it's supposed to rank among all the other games that Georgia's supposed to play and does play each and every year. Here is Kirby from a year ago.
We said before, there's five, I think, states contiguous with Georgia, so they're all huge rivalries. And to say that one's more important than the other, I think that's unfair. I think when you say SEC East, you've got to rank those opponents first, because in order to advance, you've got to beat those teams. So those would be all 1As. You know, then you cross over to the West, and it makes it a little different. But this game's as big, and they're all big, not to say that one's bigger than the other.
So, a couple things from what Kirby Smart says there. First of all, at the beginning of that, and talking about Georgia as a rival, or who Georgia's rivals are, he references the fact that there are a lot of states that touch Georgia. Georgia's kind of a unique college football institution, and that it has a lot of rivals. And one of the things that I hear a lot over the course of the last year, when I've made the case that Florida's supposed to be Georgia's biggest rival, is people will say, well, let me tell you why another game means more to me. And I understand that individually. I do get that. You know, if you live up in Dalton, or a lot of Georgia fans who live in Chattanooga outside the state of Georgia, or you live in Rome, you're going to hate Tennessee. If you live in, you know, Augusta, you're going to hate South Carolina. You live down in Valdosta, you may have special hatred for Florida because you're a little closer to Jacksonville. You know, if you live over in Columbus, LaGrange, somewhere like that, you hate Auburn a little bit more. I get why for certain individuals there are games that mean more, either because of who your next door neighbor is or kind of where you live and kind of what you deal with. I understand kind of where a lot of that comes from. I'm not talking about every single individual feeling exactly the same way. I'm talking about what the collective vision of the program is supposed to be. And I believe that the collective vision of the program, and this is important to remind ourselves of going into this week, is there is a game that means more than any other, and that is the Florida game, and it does provide you more opportunities than any other rivalry that Georgia has a chance to play, even though that's a little different than what Kirby Smart just said there. And the reason number one is, and one of the biggest reasons why we've done the Gatorator countdown every single day here on Dog Nation Daily is because, as I said a moment ago, there is just more to gain from beating the Gators consistently than almost any other team that Georgia play on its schedule. Let me give you a couple of examples. The two other rivals that kind of show up alongside Florida on the minds of many Georgia fans is Georgia Tech and Auburn. That those are the three most commonly mentioned rivals for Georgia. When I say Florida ought to be the biggest rival to the Dogs, some people come back and say, yeah, what about Auburn? Yeah, what about Georgia Tech? But let me give you just a little bit of a stat here that kind of indicates why the Florida game, I believe, should take preeminence over those other rivalries. If you want to go back to 1990, that's not a year I picked arbitrarily. That's the year that Steve Spurrier became Florida coach and the Florida program really changed. Spurrier down there in Gainesville said, we're going to stop losing to Georgia, and by and large, that's exactly what happened. So that's kind of a line of demarcation in this rivalry between Georgia and Florida. Largely dominated by Georgia before 1990, mostly dominated by Florida since 1990. So that's an important year to pick here. Since 1990, it's not just been Georgia that Florida's been beaten up on. Florida has averaged, if I did the math correctly, 9.56 wins per year every year since 1990. Compare that to Auburn, which is averages 8.15 over the same span, and Georgia Tech that's averaged just 7.33 over that same span. Now, both Georgia Tech and Auburn have won national championships since 1990, but neither have been able to match the year-to-year consistency that Florida brings to the table. So if I could give you the ability as a Georgia fan to wave a magic wand and say, hey, which team would you like to guarantee yourself a victory against every single year? Well, obviously the one that you would gain the most from beating every single year is Florida, because historically, Florida is just a better team than the other schools that Georgia would call rivals. There is just more to gain from regular wins against Florida. That's one of the reasons why the Florida rivalry for Georgia ought to matter more than any other. The other thing that you'll mention here is there is just something about a rivalry. When one side gets really good, it has a way of bringing out the best in the other side. And Georgia can't get this from Georgia Tech. The in-state school, Georgia Tech, just does not provide Georgia a lot of motivation. Yeah, Tech's going to rise up and occasionally beat Georgia, but when that happens, that's just a fluke, and the next year, normally, things kind of work out and go back to the exact same way they're supposed to be. I mean, Tech, when you look at all the ways that you measure major college programs, is barely a major college program. Doesn't do much in the way of recruiting, doesn't have much in the way of a fan base, doesn't really have much in the way of a national presence. It is the kind of team that can occasionally beat Georgia, but for Georgia, setting a goal to beat Georgia Tech does not accomplish much for the program. But beating Florida, on the other hand, because of the numbers that I just mentioned, gives you a chance to really raise the fortunes of the program. And as an example of how this can work out, look no further than, say, Alabama and Auburn. Remember how Auburn-Alabama was back in the 90s when Tommy Tuberville had Auburn winning every game in that series? And then all of a sudden, Alabama got so tired of the dominance of Auburn against Alabama that the response became Nick Saban. And Nick Saban struck fear in the hearts of Auburn, and the response to Nick Saban at Alabama was Cam Newton at Auburn. All of a sudden, Auburn's hoisting a national championship. And then Auburn doing that caused Alabama and Nick Saban to come even better, and then Auburn answered back in 2013 with an SEC championship on its own, and then Alabama may have squashed them for good, but there was some back and forth there along the way in the Nick Saban era at Alabama that really made both programs better. That's why I think college football teams should always shoot as high up the totem pole as they can for their biggest rival. And Georgia has a chance to challenge itself by proclaiming the rival that we want to pay the most attention to is the game this Saturday against Florida. The rival that we think has the chance to benefit the most is by enhancing the rivalry that goes on here with Florida. Much the same way it worked for Alabama and Auburn, I think it could work for Georgia against the Florida Gators as well. But there's also a final point to mention here. And this is something that Georgia fans probably don't like to say out loud, but every Georgia fan would admit is true. Georgia is just too good a program to have lost as much as it has to any one school, Florida included. That's just a fact. I mean, listen, you know, on this program, obviously, we see the best in the Georgia Bulldogs, and we talk about the best in the Georgia Bulldogs. Obviously, you know, I've got a great affinity for that program, but clearly Georgia at its worst is what's happened against Florida here over the course of the last three decades. Nothing good comes from pretending that isn't true. Nothing good comes from pretending that didn't happen. Georgia in the future, one of the prime directives I think this program ought to have is to correct that record against the Gators. Make it a big goal to say, hey, we're going to start stockpiling wins in this series the same way that previous coaches may have stockpiled some losses. It's another one of those reasons why the Georgia-Florida rivalry is supposed to matter as much as it does to me, hopefully to everyone soon. It's one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to seeing Georgia start to correct that record as soon as this Saturday. I mean, the bottom line for me is I think Georgia has to admit that it hasn't been as good in this rivalry as it's supposed to be, and admit that if it could have been better over the years, it might be hoisting a lot more championships. And 2017 is the perfect example of that. Georgia is in line to potentially be in Atlanta for the SEC championship and use this SEC championship the same way other SEC champions have as a springboard to a potential national championship conversation. But before it can worry or do any of that, it's got to take care of the Florida Gators on Saturday. It's a spot that Georgia's been in before. And this year, I think, it's a spot in where Georgia is much more equipped to handle what's coming for it. And speaking of that, I don't think Florida has any idea what awaits it in Jacksonville when the Gators arrive there this Saturday. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. It's great to have you with us here on our program today, whether you're watching us on Facebook. Of course, we're on Facebook Live at 10 a.m. each and every Monday through Friday on the Dog Nation Facebook page. We're also on the radio at noon every day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We look forward to being with you there as we talk about all those folks in Athens and everywhere else around Dog Nation getting ready to make their way towards Jacksonville and the Golden Isles of the Georgia coast, maybe Amelia Island, wherever you're going. We're glad that you're with us this week and hope you'll take us with you down there to Jacksonville later on the week. And, of course, we'll also post the show as a podcast for you on the worldfamousdognation.com, on SoundCloud, iTunes, pretty much wherever podcasts are found. You can find Dog Nation Daily. Now, we just told you why we do the Gator Hater Countdown every day here on Dog Nation Daily. Let's now do that Gator Hater Countdown. We started it just about 365 days ago. We're now down to just 5 days. 5 days from now, we're all in Jacksonville, those of us that can be. Though everybody else, they're in spirit, looking forward to seeing the Dogs beat the Gators and take the next step on towards what could be a very special season. And by the way, if you are there with us, we'd love to have you be a part of our Dog Nation invasion to Jacksonville. Huge tailgate set up for us. It's going to start 10 a.m. on game day. We'll tell you more about how to find where we're going to be. It includes a Dixie Vodka tasting bar for those that are 21 or older. We're going to have 4 televisions set up. Jeff Sintel and I are going to be watching a lot of those early games with you there. And while supplies last, we've got brand new red Gator Hater t-shirts that we're going to be giving away to Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers there at our Dog Nation Invasion tailgate in Jacksonville. So if you're making plans to be there starting at 10 a.m., hope you'll come on by and see us. We are in the Touchdown Lot. It's part of the Tailgaters parking collection there. It's near Gate 6 right off Bryan Street. That's where we're going to be. We'd love to have you come on by and see us on Saturday. And if you're in the Atlanta area, love to have you come on by and see us on Tuesday as well. One of our sponsors for our Dog Nation Invasion is Marlowe's. They're hosting a big Dog Nation Invasion big game preview for us. They're at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven from 6 to 8 p.m. That is tomorrow. 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta is the address for the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. Jeff Sintel and I are going to be talking about all the action about what's going to be taking place on Saturday. Hope you'll be there for it. We've also got some special giveaways for you, including Marlowe's, who's going to provide a free appetizer with your entree purchase to anyone who comes dressed in their red and black tomorrow. That's Marlowe's in Brookhaven, one of the sponsors, of course, for our Dog Nation Invasion. Another one of our great sponsors, our friends at R.S. Andrews, moving into, you know, rainy this morning. You're thinking about cold weather. Maybe your house woke up, you're a little cold. You want to make sure you get that furnace tuned up and ready to go for this winter. Make sure you trust my friends at R.S. Andrews. They're cleaned, screened, trained, and timely techs will give your system a thorough check. They'll make sure it's working well all winter long to keep your house nice, toasty, and warm. It's the guaranteed $99 furnace tune-up from our friends at R.S. Andrews. Check them out online at rsandrews.com. All right, we will have Chip Towers here coming up in just a moment. We'll talk to him about another trip for Chip down to Jacksonville. He's seen a lot of these over the years, and we'll kind of find out from him how he views this one differently than many of the others that he's taken over the years here as a member of DogNation.com. It'll be fun with Chip coming up in just a moment. Before we get to that, though, obviously a lot of you, and by the way, let me also say this. We're going to do our Gator Hater roll call also a little later on in the show today, so a lot of you have been sending in your own Gator Hater memes, your own Gator Hater t-shirts, different pictures, different things like that. We've got some really funny ones we'll do today. I mean, some of these are very funny. We'll do those with you a little later on in the show. But one of the things that a lot of you've also said to me kind of off the air a lot here recently and in talking about kind of what's going on with the game on Saturday and kind of, you know, what might be one of the themes, you've thought back and remembered. Do you remember the Christmas commitment video that Jeff Sintel put together for Dog Nation? There were a couple of these, but the first one in particular, when J.J. Holloman and Malik Herring committed to Georgia. And the theme of that video, for those of you that don't remember, was Richard LeCount, Jake Fromm, the two leaders of Georgia's 2017 class, dressed up as Santa Claus, delivering some goodies to both Herring and Holloman to let them know that, hey, we'd like to see you be a part of this Georgia class. And the joke in the video was that neither Herring or Holloman knew that it was Fromm and LeCount who were dressed up like Santa Claus. Well, many of you remembered this week, or leading into this week, what Jake Fromm asked Richard LeCount on that video. Fromm wanted to know, when are we going to tell him it was us that was Santa Claus? And many of you remembered the terrific answer that Richard LeCount gave to that. Let me let you hear it if you don't remember.
Hey, Richie, when do you think we need to let Malik and Jeremiah know what we did?
Probably sophomore year in Jacksonville.
After we beat Florida again.
Yeah, listen, I loved that from them. I was thankful that so many of you remembered that with me here this week, because I think it speaks to one of the things that we liked about that recruiting class for Georgia, the leadership, their desire to kind of go out there and do great things for the program, and the understanding that great things for this program starts with a victory over Florida. You want to own the East? You want to play for the college football playoff? You want to do all those things here in 2017? Well, as we said a year ago, the next step towards doing any of that was beating Florida. That was a step towards the progression discussion of being where this program wants to be. And it's kind of nice to think that Richard LeCount might also agree with that himself, and maybe Jake Fromm too. In fact, it's those recruiting advantages that Georgia has over Florida that I think give the Dogs the biggest edge against the Gators next Saturday. So much so that I want to make that, Richard LeCount and the other members of the 2017 class, the game-saving moment courtesy of Aldi here, the supermarket that saves you money. Why do I think Georgia's going to win next Saturday? Because I just think, or this upcoming Saturday, I just think Georgia's got better overall talent. And I think that talent gives Georgia a chance to save the game, really own the game this upcoming Saturday. And of course, that's all brought to you by Aldi, who reminds you that they have weekly fresh meat specials every Wednesday. When you see the sign, you'll find extra low prices on the very best cuts of meat. But hurry, because at these prices, the weekly supply is going to be limited. Aldi, simply smarter shopping. They bring you the game-saving moment each and every day here on Dog Nation Daily. We appreciate you being with us here on the program today. A lot of fun, including a Gator Hater roll call a little later on as we get ready for Florida on Saturday. But let's find out now a little more about the game as we get ready to welcome in Chip Towers. Great to have you with us.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And I'll get ready to say hello to Chip Towers here on Dog Nation Daily. And we'll obviously talk to him a lot about the game against Florida coming up this weekend. There's a lot to hear from Chip about that. But, Chip, before we get to that, I actually want to go back to last week here briefly for a moment, because you were in Kennesaw on Thursday for kind of what turned out to be the final high school game in the career five-star quarterback and UGA commit Justin Fields. I guess, what was it like being there, and what was the scene around Fields when this injury kind of first started to unfold? I would imagine there were some tense moments close to the Fields camp when he first had to leave the game with an injury. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that was it was really interesting for me, Brandon. As you know, I went over there just to kind of get my first look at Justin Fields. I hadn't really planned on riding live that night. I wanted to get a look at Fields and maybe come back on Friday and just kind of, you know, wax eloquent on what I'd seen from that young man. And he was impressive while he was out there, certainly. And the funny thing about it, I was actually standing right next to Kirby Smart on the sideline when Justin Fields came diving over there. If you remember from the from the television replay, he had got hit on the hand, and he kind of ran to the side and just kind of dove to the sideline. Well, that was just maybe about 5 yards away from Kirby Smart, so I left Kirby's side and went over there to look, and he was obviously surrounded by cameras and everything, and it was a weird situation because Kirby, I'm sure, would like to have, you know, turned around and gone over there and talked to the young man, but he couldn't. You know, it was the recruiting rules thing, so he just kind of had to look on and get information where he could. And I came back and told him. I said, looks like a broken finger. That was disappointing. It's really disappointing for that program because, Brandon, you know,
sure,
what he means to the Harrison Hoyas. I mean, that's really, they had a tough row to hoe anyway. Heading into the playoffs, you know, they're always running into Region 1, so that's going to end them. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, it's not a big deal. It's a broken digit. They'll, you know, repair it. He'll get well. It's not, going to change his career arc in any kind of way. In fact, I mean, it may accelerate it a little bit. I don't know whether he's going to come in as an early enrollee, but I know Georgia wants that for him. And you know, maybe he can concentrate without having to really focus as much on getting ready for an opponent each week to getting ready maybe to moving on to Georgia.
What was the spectacle like? You know, that, you know, you mentioned Kirby Smart being there. I didn't even really think about the fact that he couldn't even go over and console Fields after the injury. But you're right, you know, as a high school perspective recruit, he's not able to have that contact with him right now. But he does land there in a helicopter with Del McGee to kind of see all that unfold. And, you know, there's obviously a huge crowd there, ESPN2 cameras. What was it like just being around the spectacle of that game, which in a lot of ways is a first cousin to the spectacle of Fields' recruiting commitment announcement a couple of weeks ago when there was also a helicopter involved?
Yeah, it was, and that was the wild thing for me. I got over there very, very early, and I'm really glad I did because, it was a tightly managed, really, packed environment. There were people parking miles away and walking into the stadium. I'd never been there before. But it was packed out on the Harrison side. The students were there real early. all dressed up and painted up. And it's amazing the transfusion of energy that that kid brought to that school, you know, which doesn't have necessarily a, you know, a real strong football history. That was incredible. And you had the ESPN cameras all over the place. And, Kirby comes in on a helicopter, and you barely even notice because they kind of parked a bit away. They wouldn't let him land on the baseball field because they just put new sod, which I was surprised, you know, that Kirby wouldn't take advantage of that a little bit more. It was a great scene. And then early on, you know, I mean, if I'm looking at it from a critical eye, I'm impressed with his ability to throw the ball. He runs it a lot, you know, for Harrison, as you know, and, you know, he's kind of a one-man band in that regard. And probably there's some ball security issues there that I'm sure they'll clean up with him when he gets to college. I thought he was a little loose with the ball. He's had a lot of fumbles this year and that kind of stuff, which is kind of common. You know, they'll clean up all the fundamentals when he gets to Georgia. But definitely from an athletic standpoint, I mean, I was telling them, I said, they ought to just club that kid up and put him at running back because nobody can tackle him for the most part. He's got great moves, big size, very physical. And his arm, I mean, I was watching him in warm-ups. He's got the arm. I mean, this is a guy that just needs to be refined and molded into the quarterback that I know that Kirby and everybody in the country thinks he can become.
Let me transition talking about the Florida game here for a moment. And, you know, I've made the case over the course of the last year, including again today, why I think that Florida ought to be considered Georgia's biggest rival. In addition to the fact there's some history that would suggest that to be true, there's also a lot to be gained from beating a team like Florida consistently, given the fact that Florida consistently has been a really good sort of championship caliber program. Your opinion, though, Chip, where do you think that Florida ought to rank on Georgia's list of rivals? We all know this is a program that has a lot of them.
Yeah, I don't quibble about this. Florida's Georgia's biggest rival. I mean, and it's just because, you know, it's because of everything that it encompasses. Number one, it usually decides the East. Even if Tennessee is involved in some way, or even South Carolina on the rare, you know, ice age, you know, year or whatever. But generally, it always has a major impact on the Eastern Division race. It always does. And obviously, Florida's kind of owned this series in the last 27 games. But, of course, that wasn't always the case. So, you know, certainly in the years before that, it was Florida that was always scratching his head, like, how did we lose to Georgia again? So it's always a really important game. And then you have the factor, I mean, it's Georgia fans that carry the weight in this series. You know, I mean, they're the ones that go down there and book the condominiums. They're the ones that go down there and bring all the money into Jacksonville. You know, they're vested in this game. And certainly Georgia Tech, they hate them. And the old school Georgia fans, you'll hear them, you know, I mean, Georgia Tech, that's all that matters. But look at the series, you know, sure. 15 out of the last 18 or whatever. And that's going to be a huge game if Georgia gets all the way through and they're unscathed at that point when you play at Georgia Tech. But this is the game that matters year in and year out to the conference. And then it's all those people that invest all that money. They go down there and party and have a good time, and they want to win. And so many times in the last 27 years, they've, you know, trudged back to their, you know, $500 a night condominium dragging an L behind them. And they don't like that.
Yeah, let me actually revisit that subject since we're kind of moving into the week of the game here a little bit as well. I'm also very much in favor of the game being in Jacksonville for a lot of the reasons that you just mentioned. Yeah, Georgia fans maybe have some bad memories of the trip back home, but, you know, going to stay, as Larry Muntz was famous for saying, in Jekyll Island or St. Simon's Island. You and I are both very partial to Amelia Island, which is south of the Florida border. But nonetheless, these sort of coastal locations that dog fans kind of hold themselves up in for a few days leading up to the game, I think that's one of the real special traditions in college football. And if there was ever a reason in which Georgia decided to let that go and turn this back into just another SEC game, home and home, I do think, Chip, something would be lost there. And I know for the dog fans who are excited about making that trip, you'd be doing without what Georgia fans are looking forward to right now. Do you agree with that?
I do, Brady. This program is recorded, isn't it?
It is recorded.
Make sure that you get this. This game is never going to leave Jacksonville. It's never going to leave. There's too much there. There's too much going on. The city of Jacksonville is invested in it. Georgia's invested in it. Florida's invested in it. Georgia and Florida keep this on a short contract basis. It's a, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, 3 or 4 years, they 3 years maybe. I mean, they don't put it out very far, and there's a reason for that. They want to be able to leverage everything that they have going into the game. But Georgia and Florida both make more money from playing this game. The exposure that comes with it, that is the you know, the X integer that's hard to equate. This game is on CBS at 3:30 every year, mm-hmm. you know, and that's in years where both these teams stink, which isn't often, but sometimes it happens. But it's still because of everything, the history on both sides of the rivalry, you know, Blue to Scott and all the Gators, great Gators teams, you know, that you had in the 1990s with Spurrier. I mean, it's just too big of a deal. It's never going to move. I think Georgia and Florida are always going to play that card, like, you know, hey, we could go home and home. But nobody wants to go home and home in this series. Then it's just another SEC, you know, rival, you know, SEC home and home series, and it would lose so much of that flavor that it has here when it's played on the bank of the St. John's River every year.
On the other side of this thing for a moment, looking at Florida, it's amazing right now how similar Jim McElwain looks to some of the other coaches that Georgia's already played this season and may face before the year is out. A lot of Florida fans feeling a little restless, I would say, after two straight losses. Of course, Florida was off this past Saturday, but consecutive losses before the bye week. The offense for McElwain's really not gotten any better, and that's supposed to be his forte. You know, Brian Kelly was an embattled coach when Georgia played Notre Dame. He's since turned things around, but he certainly felt some heat before that game. Butch Jones at Tennessee, kind of the same way. And right now, I mean, you find Jim McElwain probably coaching this game against Georgia on Saturday with a little bit of pressure. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. Well, it's interesting. You know, I mean, I don't think anything's going to happen to Jim McElwain, certainly, you know, this season or probably in the next couple of seasons, quite frankly. But, you know, inside Gainesville, inside the Gator Nation, I mean, this is you wouldn't think with a team that's, you know, two-time SEC Eastern Division champions, but, you know, it's just kind of the eye test. It's just kind of everything that's going on. And then obviously this program is, you know, completely mired in this credit card fraud, you know, investigation. And that's, you know, what, you know, whether he should have known or what was going on and with all that. But having 9 players suspended has been a real black eye for this program. And I think the general feeling is that, you know, Florida's kind of come out of the East by default the past couple of years, and there's probably some truth in that. But the bottom line, you know, you got to do it. You got to get it done, and they have gotten it done and managed to get there. And, you know, this is kind of an interesting Florida team. I mean, you know, you talked about them, you know, coming off of 2 losses, and they are. But, you know, those 2 losses were by a total of 3 points to 2 pretty good teams. I mean, LSU is turning out to be all right. Texas A&M is turning out to be all right. You know, they're not great teams. And certainly if you look at Florida from a statistical standpoint, they're very, very average, you know, and that's what their record says they are, 3-3, you know, and 3-2 in the league. So, you know, Georgia is definitely the better team. But, you know, in any given year, you know, throw out the records and all that kind of stuff. But I'm like you. I mean, the matchups really suggest that Georgia should dominate this game. And that's the reason you got to, yeah, I think I saw a 14-point, Georgia's favored by 14 yeah. points going into this thing. And those guys generally know what they're talking about.
So when the seniors, the big four, Lorenzo Carter, Davin Bellamy, Nick Chubb, Sonny Michel, especially the two running backs, when they made the decision to come back to Georgia, there was this theme that quickly emerged of unfinished business. They wanted to kind of come back and correct some of the things that had happened to them in 2016. And I think when you start making a list of Georgia's unfinished business, there is nothing that you would put on the list ahead of Florida, given the fact that, you know, this is a game that Georgia's got a losing streak currently occupied in. And you know, you mentioned the 3 decades before that. When you think about Chubb, Michelle, and unfinished business, this game against the Gators and Jacksonville has got to be near the top of their list, I would imagine.
It is. That's why I feel good about Georgia going into this game and really about what Georgia's doing this whole season. You know, I mean, I don't think we could have known at the outset exactly what things were going to look like. And certainly we were all guarded in our optimism about Georgia, you know, knowing those areas that they needed to get better in, all of which they have shown significant improvement in. So there's a reason that Georgia is where it is. But I think exactly what you're talking about, the 4 seniors, and I would throw Aaron Davis and Dominique Sanders into there. This is a strong senior leadership group, and even to some extent the juniors on this team. And, you know, they came back because of what happened against Tennessee last year, because of what happened against Florida last year, because of what happened against Georgia Tech last year. And I think these guys, when it comes to these opponents in particular, are, you know, extremely focused and motivated. And I think that's a big reason why, you know, I don't see any kind of letdown or oversight. You know, I think Georgia's going to be laser focused, and certainly Nick Chubb. You know, he's had some decent games. He hadn't had great games. Georgia, in fact, this is a great stat, I think, Brandon. I just ran across this one this morning, so you'll be the first I share this with. In the last 3 years where Georgia has lost to Florida, they have 8 rushing first downs. In 3 games, 8 rushing first downs. So it's like Kirby talks about all the time. You know, there's nothing fancy about football. It's about running the football and stopping the run. And if you do that, you're going to win the game. Georgia hasn't done – they haven't been able to run the football like Georgia is built to run the football. And, I mean, look at that 2014 game when, you know, I still don't know what happened that game. Yeah. It's incredible that they run for 400-and-something yards. Georgia's going to come in here. Nick Chubb is going to come in here. Sony Michel, a Florida native, you know, just foaming at the mouth, I think, to show that they're the better football team and they're the more physical football team. I don't think Kirby's going to let anything short of that happen.
I'm keeping you late. Let me squeeze in one quick final question. Kirby will speak to the media again today. My guess is when he speaks, based on what he said on Tuesday, we'll find out that the bye week probably came at a pretty good time for guys like Trent Thompson and Terry Gobbin, two guys that had been nursing injuries. I'm expecting Kirby to provide good news on them today. Is that your expectation as well?
I think so. You know, he may play it, you know, more for what he can get out of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Kind of, he may go, well, we're not sure about Trent. But, you know, I think I mentioned this to you last week. I watched Trent, you know, skip off the field after the Missouri game. He looked like he was feeling really good to me, and he's out there running around in practice, and Gobbin was too, though we only got to see him Tuesday of last week. We'll see out there today. But I do think that Georgia is pretty much, at this point, all hands on deck. With the exception of Natress Patrick, who's not going to make it back, and that's too bad. But Reggie Carter, now listen, that's not a small thing. If he can, if he can get back on the field, that's a big deal for Georgia's inside linebackers, and I expect him to do that.
Hey Chip, it's always great to have you here on Dog Nation Daily. Looking forward to a lot from you here leading into the Florida game on Saturday, including your coverage from Jacksonville, and we'll hopefully talk to you on Monday again as well, right here on the program. Thanks so much.
You got it, man.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff from Chip Towers there. Of course, looking at the Florida game, the injury situation for Georgia, kind of everything in between. And by the way, Scott Harris in our comment section brings up a really good point. That, you know, we're talking about Trent Thompson and Terry Gobbin. You heard Chip also mention Reggie Carter there a little bit as well. Another one of those names, and this is a guy that when Kirby spoke on Tuesday, I don't believe he said that David Marshall practiced, but Scott Harris said David Marshall's also one of those big names to be aware of for Saturday, a guy that did leave the game against Missouri 2 weeks ago with an injury, and that's right, or didn't even play in the game because of an injury, and that's exactly right. Scott is all over that David Marshall situation, because Georgia, and I know Seth wrote about this over the weekend, that Georgia pass rush has just not kind of been what it's supposed to be. Marshall's one of those guys, as I'm talking about as of late, over the last couple of weeks, probably hasn't been what it needs to be, what it could have been. And Marshall being back at full health against Florida certainly gives you a much better chance at getting after Felipe Franks. And I think that storyline of how much havoc can Georgia wreak in the backfield against Florida and really put some pressure on Felipe Franks with a big-time pass rush, I think that's an important part of that game on Saturday, and I do think that David Marshall would contribute to that. By the way, somebody else in the comment section, then we'll get on to our SEC through. Somebody else in the comment section mentioning the job opening now at Georgia Southern after Tyson Summers loses his job over the weekend. And I know that Seth Emerson wrote in the forum about the possibility of Del McGee maybe emerging as a candidate there. I'm obviously like many of you. I would view that as terrible news if Georgia were to lose McGee, given the fact that he's been such a big recruiting impact on Justin Fields, on Zamir White, probably on James Cook as well. He's been a big, big impact on all those guys. That'd obviously be a huge loss. I hope that Georgia can find a way to keep him in the fold. And it's kind of funny. You know, I talked to somebody else the other day about the chances that Tyson Summers ends up working at Georgia next year. He's a guy that does have a good relationship with Kirby Smart. It'd be nice to add Summers without losing McGee. I guess that's the point that I'm trying to bring up there. I'll also tell you that Dog Nation Daily is brought to you in part today by our friends at MyBookie. Make sure you check out MyBookie, the sportsbook known for the fast, no-hassle payout when you win. And even better than that, they've got a special offer for Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers. Right now, you can get your first deposit matched up to 100% if you use the promo code DOGNATION. That's D-A-W-G, Dog Nation. Check them out online, mybookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid, and your first deposit can be matched up to 100% if you use the promo code DOGNATION at mybookie.ag. All right, a few SEC stories I want to get to here. Alabama obviously throttles Tennessee on Saturday, and I think Tennessee's making a huge mistake by not firing Butch Jones right now. That's not because I have, you know, blood in the water and call for every, you know, single coach to be fired. I try not to be. That can come across as sounding a little bit tacky. I mean, imagine if somebody was on some blog right now covering the Facebook Live podcast industry and saying, Brandon Adams ought to be fired. B.A. ought to be out of a job. That wouldn't feel very good if that person was saying that about me, and I don't lightly go into saying that about a college football coach, even though sometimes that can be kind of an easy knee-jerk reaction thing to say. But in the case of Tennessee, it does seem obvious that program ought to be able to do better than Butch Jones, even if Dog fans don't want to see Tennessee do better than Butch Jones. It ought to be the case that they are able to do that. And, you know, right now it's just not happening. But as Mike Griffith wrote at SECCountry.com over the weekend, that, you know, if he wins out, he might be able to save himself and keep his employment. But is that going to be good enough? I mean, is that good enough for Tennessee? Another 8-4 season? Another kind of mediocre season? Georgia fans would love it. Georgia fans would love the idea of Jones going 8-4 and keeping his job. But if I were to sort of speak objectively here for a moment, the fact that Georgia fans would love that is an indication why Tennessee probably shouldn't do it. And on the Alabama side of things here for a moment, another example, we'll talk more about this on AT&T SEC Country Live later on today, but another example of Nick Saban really just kind of being loose and calm and relaxed with his team. Even the halftime interview where he sort of playfully got into it with Allie LaForce, the CBS sideline reporter, it shows you a guy right now who I think is feeling pretty confident. And, you know, in some ways, his demeanor actually mirrors a little bit of what you've seen from Kirby Smart, who I think has been described at times as sort of a more fun-loving version of Nick Saban, maybe a younger, I don't want to say hipper necessarily, but maybe so, version of Saban. Well, Saban, I think, has tried to emulate some of that himself here this year, and I think you see a guy right now who's probably pretty confident in what his team's doing. Yeah, he'll kind of get on him from time to time, and he'll get on reporters from time to time, but overall, I think Saban's feeling pretty good about himself. Let me hit a couple other SEC stories here real quick. So LSU goes out and kind of keeps rolling on Saturday. They get another convincing win over Ole Miss. This is a game which I thought Ole Miss had a chance to win it. Shea Patterson does leave the game with an injury. But you got to give credit to LSU here, who a couple weeks ago looked like a disaster of a program after losing to Troy. But they have absolutely fixed things as of late, beating Florida, beating Auburn, convincing win over Ole Miss. Ed Orgeron's looking like a pretty good coach at the moment. I'm not sure that stays that way. I'm not sure that narrative maintains where it is right now, but for now it's looking pretty good. Auburn also blows out Arkansas, so clearly whatever was wrong in the LSU game is not going to afflict them the rest of the season. They kind of bounce back and get a nice win there. And let me also say this kind of away from the SEC, at least for a moment. I mean, partially involving the SEC, but kind of away from the SEC here. How about teams that Georgia beat earlier in the year going out and getting blowout victories themselves on Saturday? Notre Dame in Notre Dame Stadium, a venue taken over by Dog fans early in the year, but the Irish were dominant against USC over the weekend. Very impressive win there for the Fighting Irish, and really bolstering Georgia's playoff resume, assuming that becomes a legitimate conversation month in November. And not to be outdone by that was what Mississippi State did to Kentucky. So teams that Georgia beat, in the case of Mississippi State, convincingly got convincing wins on Saturday. That can only help Georgia. And by the way, the first college football playoff ranking announcement takes place next Tuesday on Halloween night, and Georgia's expected to be right in the thick of that. We'll make that your SEC through. All right, as promised here before we kind of wrap up our show and close out our show, want to sort of pay some credence and some thank yous here to members of our Gator Hater roll call. Now, a lot of y'all know that nobody dislikes the Florida Gators more than me, and nobody believes this game matters to Georgia more than I do, but I'm not the only one who feels that way, and that's kind of the purpose of the Gator Hater roll call, to show some love to some other Georgia fans that dislike the Gators. And if you want to be a part of our Gator Hater roll call, hit me up on Twitter, @DogNationDaily. Show me a pic of you wearing your Gator Hater t-shirt, just like I'm wearing mine on the show today. away or your own Gatorade or paraphernalia, whatever you've got, we'll put you up here on our screen, including our buddy Bassin Dog, who's just a what do you call it, Photoshop wizard. He's got our Gatorade or T-shirt in his tweet, but he's added to our license plate logo kind of a silhouette of the guy who looks like Jim McElwain on the Shark. That is a very creative thing from a buddy Bassin and a absolutely worthy inclusion in our Gatorade roll call. Joshua Campbell also giving you a couple of memes. Jim McElwain saying Gatorade football is back. Donald Trump saying fake news. Listen, I don't care who you voted for. That's just funny. John Gluck has a funny meme here. It has a couple of them. One of them I'll read. It says, it's a sad Gator fan, the Sand, saying, said, if I wanted to see a team play this bad, I would have gone to Tennessee. Pretty funny stuff from John Gluck. A really funny Gator Hater roll call entry. Here's Jamie Bailey, who's just a terrific Dog Nation Daily listener and viewer, who's apparently in Halloween dressed up like a Gator fan. He's got his orange shirt on, big long mullet in the back. He's got kind of a Gator visor with a pretty funny stuff from him. You got John Lee here, who sent this in from the on the Gator Hater roll call. His son looking forward to his first trip to the world's largest outdoor cocktail party this Saturday. He's in the swamp with the thumbs down. His son is, John's son is, there inside Ben Hill Griffith Stadium. You love that from John. That's an example of raising them right there. Take your son, if you're in Gainesville, to Ben Hill Griffith. Let him do the thumbs down, the booze. Love that from him. How about Justin McGee, another Photoshop work of brilliance here? It says UGA's got 99 problems, but Florida ain't one. And it's Kermit the Frog sipping a Georgia coffee mug with a little tea sticking out of there. And that comes all the way from Fernandina Beach. By the way, Fernandina Beach is going to be red hot this week. A lot of Georgia fans plan on descending to the first coast there for that. Justin, thanks for sending that in. Steve O'Mac, also a really funny one here. It says yellow is the new orange. This is just in time for Halloween, by the way. He calls it the hashtag Jim-O-Lantern. Now, many of y'all have kind of made fun of Jim McElwain for what you say have somewhat of a yellow hue to his teeth. I won't make a comment about that. But if you're watching some video, you can see, and you got to check this out on Facebook Live if you're just listening to the show right now. It's a flashing light GIF here of McElwain, and it goes to dark like a jack-o'-lantern with the teeth highlighted. Some of y'all are just not right. And this is an example of kind of not being right in a way that I can show. Some of y'all sent some things in that I cannot put on the air. We know we don't have FCC restrictions. We are, at least on the podcast and on the Facebook Live, I guess we do on the radio. But nonetheless, we're still sort of a family-friendly show. We want, you know, people to be able to listen with their kids. Some of what y'all sent in, Gatorade credentials are obviously well established. It probably just doesn't quite fit with the theme of our show. But if you haven't gotten in today, hit me up at Dog Nation Daily. We'll get you on the Gatorade roll call before the end of the week. All right, as we wrap up again now for real, you heard Chip Towers say this a moment ago. Georgia, I guess, opens 14-point favorite over Florida. I heard a couple different numbers. One spot, I think, had it 13.5. Somebody else went up to 14.5. 14 seems to be about the, I guess, the median number here for the moment. And I also, did I read this correctly? Georgia hasn't been this big of a favorite in this series since 1985. A staggering number to think about, and an opportunity for Georgia to kind of go out there and you know, do something big against the Florida Gators. As many of you have said in the comment section, not just get a win, but maybe get a convincing win, and I understand kind of where that sentiment comes from. For me, a win is a win, and that'll be enough to kind of correct this at least for now and move on to the next phase of the season for the Georgia Bulldogs. But I am definitely looking forward to talking to you about it every day here on Dog Nation Daily. We'll have some special guests. We'll do a lot of look at what it's going to take to win the game, and we'll just get ready to have a great time in Jacksonville on the weekend. We'll see you then right here on Dog Nation Daily.